Welcome to Seemingly Ordinary. This is a podcast where I interview people who on the surface might appear to be ordinary, but underneath the surface, they have really interesting things going on. And so I'm here today with Stacy Brown, who does homeschooling and a lot of activities related to that. And I'm just very fascinated by homeschooling. My understanding is that it's basically doubled in the United States over about the last 4 years or so, that a lot of parents were looking at what their kids were doing on Zoom during the whole lockdown situation. And then they just decided, you know, maybe for our family, we would just be better off if we were homeschooling. So I think it's a very fascinating thing, homeschooling, and I've interviewed a few homeschoolers before. But today I'm welcoming Stacy Brown, and I'm just very excited to have you here. Hi.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Would you do me a favor and just give us a little background? Just tell us, I don't know, your life story, how you got into homeschooling.
Okay, that's great. Yes. So I am not a pandemic homeschooler.
Okay.
So we are homeschooling. This is our 11th year of homeschooling. Mm. So we might have like a little bit different perspective than some of the other people that you've talked to, because we started doing it way before it was cool. So we started in 2012, and we started because, like, when there was only like 1.3 million people in the world doing it. So like about 2% of Americans were homeschooling.
Okay.
And like at this point in time, I think that it's up to about 7% of homeschooling.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So anyways, that's kind of so we're not pandemic homeschoolers, but we have, we're a Catholic family. We have 7 kids. We have 5 boys.
Wow.
So of course we have to homeschool. No, I'm just kidding. And we have 2 daughters. We had the 4 boys all in a row though.
Okay.
And so that makes for an interesting family life. After we had our 4th son, the city kicked us out, or at least we left the city to pursue country life as well. So we did that about 10 years ago. And so we live on a hobby farm, and we have all the animals and all the kids.
Okay.
And it's been a really beautiful life.
This is really kind of like a lot of people's dream, to be entirely honest. Like, you just always read about this, and it sounds very good to me. I grew up in a small town with 800 people, and there were 32 kids in my high school class, and there were no stoplights, and there were far more cows than people. And the fact that you're out there on a farm, and, you know, you have animals, and you're probably growing things as well, and it just sounds ideal to me. So you said something I just can't leave alone. You said that the city kicked you out. What's all that?
Well, I don't know. I don't think I was made for the city. So my husband and I built a new house in 2010. And then the economy was sort of bad at that time.
Right, I remember.
And so we were the first house in a brand new subdivision.
Mm.
But then there was no houses
Okay.
that were built around us in that time. So we had 2 years of being the only house in a brand new subdivision. Neighborhood in a subdivision.
Okay,
so
that actually sounds nice.
It was lovely. So we had 25 acres all around us. And so we had 2 boys, and then we had 3 boys, and then we had 4 boys, and then we had a garden, and then we got some chickens, and then we got a camper.
Okay.
And then the economy sort of righted itself.
Yeah.
And they started building houses that looked just like ours all around it.
Mm.
And they weren't like, they weren't really our sort of people. And then we got, like, the city, there was a homeowners association, and we were getting fined because our trash cans were in front of the garage, and they didn't like our camper parked in the road. Just all those things that we were like, we got to go.
Right.
This is not.
Okay.
We had too many kids, too many animals, too many dogs.
Gotcha.
We had to leave.
Do you feel like this is just, I don't know, typical persnickety suburban, like, oh, your trash can's in the wrong spot, you know, or do you feel that, you know how, like, sometimes they don't fire a worker, they just give him all the crap jobs, you know, to the point where he's like, wow, this is unbearable.
Yes. I don't know what happened. It was strange. It's kind of like choosing to have, like, get married or have the kids or have another kid or get, like, the, you know, plant the garden or buy the chicken, do something different. Like homeschooling and moving out to the country were like these really loud callings to us.
Okay.
And we didn't know where they were coming from except for from God. And so all we could do was listen.
Follow.
So with homeschooling and for homesteading too, I feel like those are two things that like once they get put in your brain, it's really hard to make them go away. Like, and the God just keeps like peppering you. And like every time you open your internet browser, there will be something about homeschooling or there will be something about raising chickens or.
Right. I mean, that's partially the algorithm, but I could also see that being a nudge from God.
Yeah. But the, also just the people that like we kept encountering were people that like had these same dreams that we didn't know that we like even had like within us.
Okay.
Beforehand.
So you're feeling maybe kind of like, well, okay, yeah, it could be God giving you a nudge. Like, we're just going to put these people in your lives all the time. There's a psychologist, Carl Jung, who would call those things synchronicities. Mm-hmm. And he definitely believed in God. And he just thought, well, maybe synchronicity is just the way you get nudged, you know? Sure. So, like, you're just seeing these random occurrences, except they're not random, you know? So, okay. So then you went out in, did you say 2012?
Yes. So we started homeschooling in 2012. We didn't move to the country for another couple of years.
Okay. Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
With starting to homeschool though, so we had the three little boys and, you know, we first like we hadn't like really had a faith conversion yet. So we were going to do public school.
Okay.
And then we did, my husband and I both went through Christ Renews His Parish, which is, was like the first like Christian Catholic community that we had ever truly been a part of. And it really changed our lives.
It's like a retreat for people who don't know. It's like a Catholic retreat and you just spend, I don't know, 2-3 days just sort of stepping out of your life and stepping back and looking at the big picture.
Yes. And then you go into formation with that same group of people to put on the next retreat like about 6 months later.
Oh, okay. So that's the buy-in or the ownership.
Yeah. So that like continuation of that, it was just like something very unique to us. And we just really fell in love with our faith and we really fell in love with Jesus. And we learned about like discernment and living intentionally.
Versus like just waking up and just like letting life sort of push you around.
Yeah, like, and we weren't like aware that we were not like pursuing God's will or anything like that. We just, I don't know, we were just doing our things. We were in our 20s and having the kids and doing the things. And, so, but the Christ Renews and our faith, we had this really big faith conversion. And God just started speaking to us like so loudly in so many things. And so we were going to send our kids to Catholic school, but we had these three little boys and they were the best of friends. And they were so outside loving and so inquisitive. Like my oldest, he would, you know, he's 4 years old and he's, you know, how do the power lines work, Mom? How does the radio work, Mom?
These sound like very masculine questions.
Yes, I know.
By
how do diesel engines work, Mom? I don't know, but we can find out together. And so we started, so just something about like putting him in 8 hours or 7 hours of like a classroom setting. And taking him away from his brothers and his sandbox, and he was still napping at the time, and like all of it just like, and you know, I've been to school before, like something about it just wasn't sitting right with me, not like, even though I thought like, that's just what you do, like something was like not, I just was dreading it.
Yes.
Most moms I know are really looking forward to sending their kids to kindergarten. Yeah. And I
was. Well, it's a milestone.
It is. Like, it's something that you do and you're proud of. But I was just, like, not looking forward to it one single bit.
I mean, that's a gigantic indicator.
Yes. And so then, the God working the way that he does, he kept putting all these homeschooling families in front of me.
Okay.
Even though there wasn't very many in the world at the time, like, here they all are, like, in my Bible study group or people I would meet at the park. And so, you know, we decided, well, you know, it's just kindergarten.
Mm.
Let's save our $2,500 tuition money. It's just kindergarten.
Okay.
And here we are 11 years later.
Yeah.
And then it was just middle school.
Okay.
And then it was just high school. And here we are. Mm-hmm. And it's been really great.
This is so awesome. I just really enjoy hearing the story. And so you have seven and, okay, so that was the third one, right?
Well, after we had our third baby is when we started homeschooling.
Okay, so then everybody got homeschooled.
What
about the first two?
Them too.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
They started the show.
Now, how did those two feel about, well, I am in normal school and now I'm not
Never went. That's why we started.
Oh.
Is because they, like, I just did not want to.
First one.
Yeah, I just did not want to send them. So we just decided it was just kindergarten. Let's just stay in your sandbox.
Okay. So I think the ultimate question on homeschooling is it better? And like on what levels is it better? And I can think of like three or four. Some people are going to say faith. Other people are going to say culture. Some people are going to say, raising like tough, independent, resilient kids. Some people are going to say academics. Some people are going to say extracurriculars such as athletics or artistic mm-hmm. endeavors. Just a wide variety of categories. But ultimately, like, is it better?
Well,
for my family,
academically, I think that things can be achieved in homeschool that really can dive into like each person's unique interests. Mm. Because if you don't care about something, it's really mm-hmm. hard to learn it.
No kidding.
So
agree completely.
Don't you think?
Well, yeah, because I'm teaching high school and just. In general, okay, so like everybody maybe has seven classes. And so it's just logical if you realize everybody is going to have a seventh favorite class. Right. So just because you're going to have a favorite, you're going to have a second favorite. And if you hate school, you're going to have a least worst, and then you're going to have a second least worst, all the way down to worst, you know? So that being said, let's just say that mine happens to be biology, that's the subject that I like the least. Well, maybe I have no interest in it. And so maybe it's just really kind of hard for me to put any energy or effort into it. And, you know, for somebody to be a straight A student, I was kind of a straight A student. Sure. But that's not normal, is what I've learned, because you really have to work hard at everything. And not everybody is willing to do that. People are much more willing to work hard at things that they liked in the first place. You know, for you to work hard at that thing that's like your seventh favorite thing, that just requires, you know, ridiculous amounts of effort, you know, because, yeah, you just have to slave away at something that you dread. Who does that?
Right.
You know?
But in a homeschooling setting, you know, everyone needs to take biology.
Yes.
Right? And mm-hmm. in my school, everyone's going to take biology at least three times.
Okay.
Spending whole years
okay.
on biology.
Okay.
So how do I make my non-loving biology kid like biology?
How do you do that?
So that's like the beauty of homeschooling. Like, so some kids learn really well from like video-based instruction. Mm-hmm. Some okay. kids really love labs. Some okay. kids really like, not very many kids like textbooks, but I'm sure there are a few kids out there who like learning from textbooks.
Right.
But, you know, but we can really like design like almost a perfect, as perfect as can be, biology mm-hmm. curriculum for each kid for, you know, first grade, fifth grade, and ninth grade. Based on where they're at okay. and really picking the biological subjects, you know, or really for any subject, you know, that is going to resonate with them, and they can have a lot of ownership over those things. So it's all my kids have liked most okay. of the things. And the things that they don't like on their seventh favorite subject, as mm-hmm. you said, mm-hmm. you know, those are the things that since like they're not in any sort of classroom for an hour having mm-hmm. to learn that. If it's okay. grammar and they don't like grammar, they have a grammar workbook. They can get their grammar book done in 10 minutes okay. and then they can move on with their day as long as they have done it mm-hmm. well. So it's a lot of motivation to okay. like do it well so that mom does not have to talk to you about it ever until tomorrow, you know? So like they really learn to be like self-motivated learners
okay.
and they have a lot of buy-in because they know and they trust me that I'm going to pick something based on that it will work well for their learning styles
okay.
and their interests as well.
Well, also too, it might be when people are very young, they may not really know what they like or dislike anyway.
Right.
You know, I used to teach math and just you sort of realize that a lot of people would sort of poison the well. I'm talking about the adults. Like the kid would go home and then their parents would say, oh, I never liked that subject. And so then that would just sort of like, you know, sort of like taint the situation before you even got into it. Now with yours, I've heard about unschooling, and basically with here, unschooling is slightly different than homeschooling, or it's a branch of homeschooling. And their philosophy is, well, you know, we don't want to just recreate the school system within the home, because what would be the point of that? So they sort of like let kids do what they want to do, pursue their own interests. So maybe you don't get to biology for like 4 years or something. You know, if the kid's not interested in it, like let's say they're binging on history, then, well, we're just going to do history with this particular kid. We're sort of going to let their interests dictate. What are your thoughts on all of that?
Yes. Yeah, so I actually love, we can talk about like educational models a bit later, so I am definitely what you would probably call a classical educator. But that's only during like our set school time. The rest of the time, like I am 100% an unschooler. So one of the things that unschoolers, like one of the things that they like to do is they call it the concept of strewing. Okay. And so if you want your kids to learn biology, you like get some like squishy body models and you like leave them out on the counter so that they can like mess with it.
Oh.
And maybe that will, maybe they'll learn something. Maybe they won't learn something.
Like you strew stuff all over the house.
So you get like, and so like, and I've, so I always have like used this principle and checked out tons of library books on every subject.
Okay.
From hobbies to arts to poetry to history to just picture books that the kids would enjoy when they first start reading.
And then they just pick them up and read.
And they just pick them up and read because we don't allow a lot of screen. So if they're inside, which they're boys, so they try not to be inside. But if they are inside, they're usually looking through the book. So you can do the same with like, you know, there's so many board games out now. But like and science kits and I mean, there's a huge market for homeschooling or strewing or however you want to trick, like sneaky teach your kids. Podcasting is a wonderful way to just turn something on in the car and like, boom, your kids are learning and they didn't even mean to be.
Wow.
So it has actually worked really well because my kids are huge like hobby enthusiasts and have pretty much run through almost every hobby that I can think of.
Okay, give me a few.
Okay, so right now, my oldest son is really into knife making. So he's 16.
That's cool.
And he actually made his own forge when he was 11 or 12.
Whoa.
Out of like rocks and my blow dryer and other odds and ends from around the house. So they have a real forge now that we got on Amazon. But he's making some really cool knives. He's really into welding. My second son is a really talented woodworker.
Oh, cool.
And makes like beautiful furniture and cutting boards and the handles for the knives. He can do leather working. He's really talented. My third son, he's kind of has some different different hobbies. He likes to pelt animals.
Oh, nice.
So he raises rabbits to pelt for fur.
Okay.
And has also pelted a fox. He's pelted some steers from our farm.
Wow.
So he just turned 12. He also forages for like herbs and makes a lot of like herbal medicines and salves and things like that.
Is so wild.
These are just some of the things that they've like, this is what they're into like right this minute. But I tell you, they've like cycled through all the things.
You know, I wouldn't have thought of those things myself when I was a kid. I had a cousin who was making swords and selling them for like $7,000 each, et cetera. So I might have thought of knife making, but some of the other things I don't think I would have thought of. How do you expose your kids to all of these things so that they can actually think of it?
Well, that you start with the library books.
Okay.
And it's a big compliment when like you get them like a book on electricity or how to rewire things. And they're like, oh, thank you, Mom. Mm. I would have never picked this book out. Thanks for buying me this book about wiring. Wow. And you're like,
Okay,
you're welcome, you know? And so they're just really curious kids.
Okay.
And I
feel like all kids are curious.
They are curious, but what's different is my kids have time. Like, they have the time, like, to do these things.
Right.
So one rule that I have, and my husband has this too, is if our kids ask for work, we always say yes.
Okay.
So we want to raise a chicken. We want to raise chickens. Yes. We want to build. We want to do work. Woodworking.
Okay.
Yes. We want to be a. We want to weld. Yes.
Okay. So you never. I mean, you have seven kids. You never say, wow, that would be a lot of equipment. That would take up a lot of space. That would be too expensive.
No, we say, you know, because so much can be done on a small scale.
Okay.
And because kids are really creative.
Okay.
And so we weren't going to buy my 11-year-old a forge. But he found some pavers. He found a blow dryer. He found a blowtorch in the garage.
Jeez.
And he made a forge.
Okay.
You know, he found a grinder from his grandpa and he ground the knife. You know, they can whittle. They're creative.
I love this. I really love this. Okay. So do you think kids are naturally creative, and then perhaps, Freud, you know, the psychologist, said that if you compare and contrast the creativity of the average child with that of the average adult, the results are distressing.
Yes, definitely.
So Freud was right about that.
I think so. I just think that they're just made for wonder, and I right now we have a pond to the back, and it's so beautiful to watch my kids be like, oh, mom, look at those ducks. Oh, okay. Mom, look at those bald eagles. Yeah. And I am 40, so uh-huh. I'm like, cool, okay. Ducks.
Yeah, you're like, I've seen ducks before.
And they've seen ducks, too. Okay. They've lived there the same amount of time that I have, and mm-hmm. they've seen ducks every day okay. their whole entire life.
Yeah, but this one's different.
But they have this wonder that they, bring from it. And so I'm trying most of the time to keep up with them.
Okay.
And to not be,
jaded.
Or just, dumbed down by the world.
Gotcha.
You know?
Gotcha.
Happens to us.
And where does that – I mean, I've got my own theories. I just would love to hear your theories on that. I really think Aristotle said that one of the greatest pleasures of humanity is to learn. I think that was correct. And then I also think that kids are just naturally either creative and or inquisitive. I think that's correct as well. And then I think maybe by the time people are adults, that's just less in evidence. And I don't feel like people grow out of that naturally. I just would like to know your theories on why that happens.
I don't know. I think that, so much of today, we're pushed into these, specialties.
Mm.
And so we sort of, try to stay in our,
stay in our lane.
Stay in our lane of what is what we're supposed to know about.
Okay.
And
hey, buddy, you're a fill in the blank.
Yes.
Whatever his career is or
yes.
her career is.
Yes. And so that we forget that, we can still learn things today.
Yes.
And why not be, and so that's one of the things that I've really loved about being on the farm, for myself.
Yeah.
Is, my kids are out there doing their weird things. And so mm-hmm. I feel like I kind of have to keep up with them. So I'm I'm going to learn how to make sourdough
okay.
bread.
Okay.
I'm going to learn how to, grow elderberries. I think we should order a flock of ducks,
And so you're open-minded. You're willing to jump in with the kids on this. I imagine in a few cases, you probably have to overcome some of your natural interests.
Yeah,
You might not be, I don't know, maybe you are interested in welding, but let's just say maybe you weren't, but then you start getting interested because your son is.
No, I don't care about welding.
Okay.
I don't. I never will care about welding.
Okay.
It is his thing, uh-huh. and I do not help him.
And
do not help him learn it.
But you don't pour cold water over it, obviously.
No, I just say, go for it, honey.
Okay.
They do. And so, for a homeschooling family who we're together all the time, okay. homeschool, hobbies are so important because we need things to go off on our own to do.
Right, so you don't drive each other crazy.
So we don't drive each other crazy.
And you have something to talk about when you come back together.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we need something to go out and then be able to come back together and share
okay.
Wow, you did this and you did this and
yeah.
and then, in a family, I don't know if you had brothers and sisters.
I do.
But so nothing that the boys do is ever going to live up to the brother's expectations. What they should have done is made it sharper. What they should have done is made it a different,
Everybody's a critic.
Everybody's a critic. And that's just part of family
yeah.
life. And
yeah.
But it happens so in everyday conversations mm-hmm. and it's mm-hmm. how they learn and it's how they,
right.
that's how they communicate with each
well,
other.
Well, it also toughens people up a little bit too. If you
yeah.
can't stand any sort of critique or criticism, being in a family of seven, you'll probably get over that pretty fast.
Oh yeah. It's.
Okay. they're like, okay, so you don't think the sword is sharp enough, whatever.
Right. Nobody cares. Everybody is just doing their
okay.
thing and, happy for each other. And sometimes they really come together on things and sometimes they are kind of stay in their own things
okay.
too. And that's
how
fine.
Old is the oldest?
My oldest is 16.
And the youngest?
Is 2.
2. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then academically, in subjects like math, English, state testing, that type of thing, do you have to put up with that state testing?
No. Kansas
okay.
has no rules.
How do you know where your kids are at? Not that I'm thinking state testing is the end-all, be-all of figuring out where people are at. I mean, there's an argument to be made that these tests give some information, but some people, I think, maybe oversell them quite a bit. But
mm-hmm.
how do you know how your kids are performing, say, relative to their peers?
I don't really care how they're doing relative to their peers.
I mean, if they were behind, that would probably worry you.
I don't know that there's a behind, though, either in school. Like, I think that – so we did do some state testing 1 year. We didn't do the Kansas one, but we did that – I think it's called the California Achievement Test.
Okay.
We did it when my oldest was in sixth grade. So I had sixth grade, fourth grade, second grade. And my oldest scored – like college level on most of the subjects.
Wow.
So I decided that those were silly and we weren't going to do those anymore because I did not feel that he was college level in sixth grade.
Okay.
So that
in certain areas he might have been though.
Maybe, but
it's entirely possible.
Yes, but I doubt it. Okay. So that kind of wavered my, you know, wanes my like confidence in anything like that. So
he could have been a good reader and a sharp writer.
He is a good reader and he is a sharp writer. Mm-hmm. He just took his ACT. He did really well.
Okay. Over a 21?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Because 21 is the national average.
Yes. He did much better than that.
Okay.
So I think we're on the right track. Mm. And
It sounds like you are.
Yeah. I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah. I mean, if 21's average, you know, people go to school and you know, take all those classes and et cetera. And then if the average is 21, of course, that means half the people are below a 21.
Right.
So if he's well above a 21, then just if we're going to put any credence in tests, then he's doing rather well.
Yes. No, I feel like I have a good gauge on like, I know where my kids' strengths are and I know where their weaknesses are. Mm. They know where their strengths are and they know where their weaknesses are. Okay. And, you know, everybody's going to have those things.
Right.
So it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, like my kids can do is they can self-educate really well.
Okay.
And I'm a big believer that self-education is the best kind of education.
Right. I think it's essential.
Yes.
I think it's essential. I mean, you're not always going to, it'd be great, you know, if you always had a mentor who was readily available to walk you through things, but sometimes those people aren't there. And so you do have to train yourself. You have to learn how to learn. Mm-hmm. That's essential.
Yes. Yes. So yes.
How do they do that? Do they do that from books, from YouTube videos, from other people, from podcasts? How do they do that?
How do they learn?
Self-teach.
So since I have so many kiddos at the same time, they all have planners, and they are required to pretty much keep their planners open in front of them all the time because I cannot keep every single thing that they are doing in my head at every moment.
Okay.
So I write out on all of their planners. And they are responsible for going through those things.
Mm.
So they just do. So as soon as they are independent readers, I can really release them more and more to teach themselves.
Nice.
We do very little, like until high school, we do very little things on like computer-based learning.
Okay.
So most of the time they are reading books and then responding in some way to what
they have
read.
Are you making them write essays?
Oh, definitely. They write essays. They learn to write through like the Greek Pro Gymnastica sort of writing.
I don't know what that is.
So it's just like a series of, you know, you start with like being able to like narrate things back. They start rewriting things that have already been written, like a fable. They'll just, you know, rewrite into their own words, starting in fourth grade. And then they go to much more analytical ways of writing as they, you know, progress through the years.
Okay.
They're good writers, though. Okay. I'm proud of them all for their writing. Some of them really love writing, and some of them don't, but they're good at it.
Okay. They're all good at it.
I think they are. Okay. I like to write, so it's one of the things that I'm kind of passionate about.
Yes.
And so sometimes we've done, like, on Fridays, like as a family subject, we'll do like a Friday free write where I'll have like a topic like, what do you love about homeschooling? Or what sort of animal do you think we should get this summer? And everyone will have like, you know, 5 minutes to write a quick little essay and then we'll share. And I'm always I'm always surprised and happy at, you know, the quality of their work. Yeah.
Okay. You have a philosophy of writing, for example, writing should be simple, clear, and direct.
Yes,
things
definitely.
Along those lines.
Yeah, so I'm a journalism major.
Okay.
So I'm kind of picky about writing. So my son, my oldest is taking Comp 1 and Comp 2 this year at Johnson County Community College. So he's kind of left my homeschool a little bit and is taking some dual credits.
Okay.
And so he keeps talking about getting these really good grades in his comp classes. And He's like, but there's not red pin all over them like they were when I was homeschooling. Okay. And so it's I kind of pick their writing apart. So they're used to it by the time they go out and are.
Well, if he's already taking, you know, comp one, comp two on the university level and he's 16, it would seem that you're doing a lot of things correct.
I hope so.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then is he also doing algebra?
He took college algebra this year.
Well, then he's ahead on that too, because for a lot of people, that's a course you take when you are 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of people who don't quite make it the college algebra. And then when they go to the college, then the college is going to insist that's kind of a minimum that everybody pass. And a lot of schools have invented two courses below that, that you don't get any credit for, but you have to take those to just be able to bring yourself up to college algebra so that you can actually pass the college algebra. And that's a real sticking point for a lot of college students, that if they can't get past college algebra, they're simply never going to graduate from the university. I knew people when I was teaching at UMKC who had taken college algebra three times, and you know, because they flunked it the first two times. It was just a terrible Achilles heel for a lot of people. So that if your son is doing that at the age of 16, I think that's great.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because he just took Algebra 1 and Geometry. And then he took the college entrance test and tested into college algebra.
Wow.
Or even he could have taken pre-calc if he wanted to, but we weren't that brave.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
With my second son, though, it will be a little bit younger. So he's going to go ahead and take Algebra 2 and then jump into college classes because it just moves a little fast.
Okay. And the nice thing about it is that, you know, maybe somebody's ahead in English, but maybe the other one's ahead in math, but they're all doing rather well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So academically, things sound marvelous. Now, okay, back in the 90s, I was teaching at UMKC, but also Johnson County Community College nearby. And a lot of my students at the time wanted to write papers about homeschooling, and I always kind of made them do the positives and the negatives on something, and then you are free to come to whatever conclusion you want to come to. Invariably, the number one objection against homeschooling 30 years ago is that you're going to be creating, I don't know, some freaks or some weirdos. I mean, this was really kind of like the major objection, so I'm putting it as obnoxiously as I can. And a lot of the homeschoolers would say, well, we're looking for a different culture than the public school. And, you know, we form groups with other homeschoolers. So people are definitely not socially isolated or anything like that. And so we think we're producing, you know, people who are kind and generous and level-headed and who can talk with adults. I just would like to kind of know what's your social aim? You know, for your kids, social and or character aim.
Yes. So, well, first of all, I do tell my kids all the time that they are not allowed to only be friends and associate with other Catholic homeschoolers.
Okay.
Like, we do not want our world to be
narrow,
so small.
Okay.
You know, but and that being said, though, you know, because and I feel like really comfortable with that because my kids are with me all the time, you know, so when they do go out into the world, like they have a pretty good gauge on like, oh, not going to go there or, you know, they have alarms going off when they see things that
are amiss. Yeah.
You know, because we've been able to sort of foster, you know, the good for such a long time and like for all of their daily life. So we do a lot of, I feel like my kids have a lot of friends and, we have a lot of family members in town too. So we spend a lot of time with family, like our extended family. So, I mean, the homeschooling community is just growing and growing and growing and growing. So the problem with homeschooling right now, I think, is it's so hard to stay home and do your school because like
there's so much going on
all the time. So like, I mean, I'm so glad that we live 25 minutes out of town because it's more inconvenient and we always have a baby, you know, so it's more inconvenient for me to load up everyone. And I'm like actually so thankful for it because I don't know if you've noticed, but like every single organization, every library, every gym, every art class, everything has kind of caught wind of these homeschoolers that are free during the day and everybody wants your money. Every single organization now has classes for homeschoolers at 10 o'clock in the morning and at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
And They all sound really great.
Okay.
So you got to stay home though and do your school.
They're offering really good stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's just say for the sake of argument that somebody had maybe two or three kids and they wanted to take their kids to an event every single day, Monday through Friday. Would that be a good way to go?
I think that parents, like if you are a new homeschooler or if you're a discerning homeschool, mm-hmm. or even if you're a long-time, I think you should be really careful about like exchanging one system for another.
Okay.
You know, I see a lot of people doing that. You know, they're like, oh, I'm going to homeschool my kids this year. And then they're looking for a writing class, a Latin class, a logic class, a dance class. Their kids are playing soccer. Their kids are playing, you know, music class. And so they're kind of just
duplicating.
They're duplicating a different kind of system, and it means a system where the mom drives around in the car all day.
Which I think that's what a lot of people who go to ordinary school complain about in the first place, which is mom becomes the chauffeur, you know, and sometimes dad becomes the chauffeur, and that's all they do.
Right, and I don't want that for my family.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. One of the things that I feel strongly about is that, I mean, this is kind of my life too, and I'm not living my life for my kids, as controversial as that sounds.
Right.
And so I don't want to drive you around in the car all day.
Yeah.
I want to stay home and be with you and do school with you, and I want to discern very carefully what the good opportunities are for our family. Mm. But we will not just sign you up for things without a lot of like intentionality behind it.
Right. Well, when there's tons of stuff available, I do think that this is a problem for a lot of people because, well, you just, you know, your eyes get bigger than your stomach. It's a little bit like apps on your phone. Like people just keep downloading more apps or it's like, you know, people who buy, I don't know, like 30 pairs of boots, but you don't really necessarily need 30 pairs of boots, right. You know? And so it's just kind of like more is better philosophy. I don't know, just a long time ago, I used to eat cereal, but I don't eat cereal anymore. But one time I counted and I realized I have 42 boxes of cereal in the house. Like, and then I decided, okay, I'm not buying any more cereal until all 42 of these boxes are gone, you know? So it just, you know, it can get ridiculous. And I just think that's what a lot of parents are thinking. And I just think kind of a related problem is split attention. Mm-hmm. You know, if my attention is split 15 different ways, you know, how am I supposed to get good at anything?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I think that was one of the complaints about just maybe the school day for some people is that, well, seven classes plus extracurriculars plus work plus other things. Pretty soon you're splitting somebody's attention like 12 to 15 different ways. And then you give everybody a cell phone, which just fragments the rest of their attention.
Right.
You know, because people are checking that thing just nonstop for notifications and just, I don't know.
I think a lot of pressure is placed on our teenagers, our American teenagers right now. You know, just, yes, go to school, take honors classes, take your ACT, get into a good college.
Yes.
Take, you know, get a job, do community service, make sure you play sports. Why aren't you in any clubs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, and then like, you know, have a lot of friends and you
right.
probably should have a girlfriend or a boyfriend
right.
and make, did you get to, are you inviting anyone to prom? And like, and then over here, the parents are like, but you never spend any time with us
right.
and you're grumpy and you're tired
right.
and you're on your phone too late.
And you know, the things that I don't know when I think of schools, gosh, wouldn't it be great if everybody loved to read?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a hobby or an activity or future job prospect, something that they were just super excited about? You can talk to a bunch of teenagers and they honestly don't know what they want. And that just seems crazy to me. I had somebody who's very wise say to me that kids, like under the age of 12, always know what they want.
Right.
And then as we get older, oftentimes you run into people who have no idea what they want. So, you know, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
I just think, well, gosh, they also lost their creativity. So people don't know what they want and they lost their creativity.
Sure.
And also, too, if their attention is fragmented as much as you said, then where do they read? Because to me, I don't know, I was in English.
Or pray.
Yeah.
Or
yeah. We don't have 10 minutes of silence. So yeah, we don't pray, we don't reflect, we don't journal, we don't read. I mean, a lot of people do.
Sure.
So I'm not trying to, but these things seem very important to me, you know.
Yeah.
I think you're providing it. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I think we are too. My son who is going to the junior college, it's been a shift for us this year because, you know, honestly, he's 16 and this is the first time that one of my kids has gone to school outside of the home. And so he is not gone all the time, but he is gone Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays because he works afterwards. And so it was kind of hard for me at first to get used to him like being gone during the day.
I bet.
It's still really hard for my little kids.
They miss him. Okay.
And it's hard for my husband too because he kind of gets the short end of the stick because he also has a social life now. Mm. And so he kind of misses him just coming and going more than the rest of us do. So we still have those Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Okay.
Like with our whole family like intact. But it's been a transition.
Okay. How is he handling being around a bunch of 18-year-olds to 22-year-olds or older? Because that's what you would get at a community college mostly, right?
Yeah, he's rocking it. He took a business class last semester, and it was one of those classes with lots and lots of group projects.
Okay.
And every single time he was, you know, at first he kind of sort of held back, and then he realized that there are far too few leaders in the world, and really like found out that he was going to have to lead the show if he wanted to get the grade that he wanted to do. So he's the oldest of seven kids. This is not difficult for him to be the leader.
Even though he's 16 and maybe they're 19.
Yes, it was not intimidating for him at all after he just got, you know, so he did a great job. He led his groups and
he's... Well, I guess props to those others that they are maybe willing to accept leadership from a 16-year-old just simply because he is capable.
Well, he is 6'2 and weighs 200 pounds, so he doesn't really look like he's 16.
Just don't tell them your age.
Right. Okay. Yes. At the community college, I don't know that everyone knows like how old, you know, like there certainly was like some like 40-year-olds in the class there were some other high school kids in the class and everywhere in between. So it was a good community for him.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
I really do. And I guess if you don't tell them your age, they might not figure it out.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and then plus I hate to say this, but there's plenty of people who have done lots of group work in high school and junior high where they basically sort of figured out that, well, if I don't do anything, somebody else will.
Yes.
So there's a bunch of that.
That's what he found out. He didn't know that about people, that so many people like would fall to the lowest common denominator.
Right.
So I think that was a little bit of a surprise for him. It was honestly a little bit disappointing to him.
Oh, yeah, sure. Because
to know that about people.
Yeah, you think other people are decisive and confident and courageous and would find the subject matter interesting and would care. And then you find out, well, sometimes not.
Yeah.
You know, on these type of things.
Right.
So how did he handle the disappointment?
He just went with it. You know, and you know, like that's the good thing about him taking college classes with us as his, like, you know, being so young is that my husband and I can be like, yeah, that's just kind of how it is. Mm-hmm. If you want to do well, you're going to have to like rise above this and just take matters into your own hands and do everything that you are responsible for doing.
Are you a little worried about a regression to the mean type of a thing where, you know, I mean, people tend to be the average of the five people they hang around with the most. I mean, part of the reason you homeschool in the first place is because you want to create this awesome environment. So then if you put them in a typical environment, then are you worried just a little bit about undue influence from the outside?
That's a really good question. But no, not at all. He likes it there. He likes the dual enrollment. And it was time for him to kind of move on to his own thing. Mm. But it was sort of sad because we've kind of switched from like a beautiful, true and good and beautiful education to more of a box checking situation where he's just trying to finish up some high school credits and also get the college credits in the bag as
Does he have to get a GED or whatever the equivalent is?
No, he doesn't.
They don't care.
They don't care.
Okay.
I mean, he'll just like if he decides to go to college after high school, then they'll just look at his transcript, like his coursework and his ACT scores.
Is that true for everybody maybe we don't need these high school diplomas?
In the state of Kansas, every homeschool operates as its own private school.
Whoa. Okay.
That's how you file with the states. Okay.
So then, but isn't there like a graduation requirement then?
Yes. So I would just look online on Kansas high school graduation requirements, and we just went through all of those, you know, 4 credits of English, 3 or 4 credits of math, 3 sciences with lab, etc. You know, I think you need 21 credits to graduate high school.
How extensive is that? Like, let's just pick one class. You can pick, like, maybe it's English or math or something. But, okay, so then what do you have to do to prove to the state that, okay, this is a legitimate grade or whatever the case may be?
You don't.
Okay.
But your ACT scores should reflect that.
Okay.
But I don't know how else. I mean, how would your school prove?
I don't know. I think, we just have certain requirements. Like, you know, there might be like 10 criteria in a given class. You know, these various topics have to be discussed.
Right.
You know, for example, if you're teaching math, then usually there's 10 chapters in the book and you have to hit all 10 of them and you have to give tests and there has to be a final and they have to pass. I mean, do you do that kind of thing? Or?
I think there's actually like an hour requirements per class. Mm. And it's not coming to my head right now, like what the actual hour requirement is.
I mean, that is true. They make us be in school, I think, a certain number of hours per year.
Yeah, it's the same. We would have the same the same requirements as any other school.
What if you're way ahead, though? What if your kid can pass all these things by the time they're 16, which your kid is? Just taking college classes.
Yeah, so then you could go a different route and start, you know, sitting for the CLEP test if you wanted to.
Gotcha.
I'm sure that that any state would recognize
a CLEP
test.
That's college level examination program.
Yeah, I'm sure that they would recognize that, don't you think?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't really worry about any of that too much. Okay. We're just doing our best over here. And
the colleges have said, hey, bring him on. That's
great. He took all the placement college tests at the college and got into what he needed to get into. And we'll just kind of do that with all of our kids. I think this will be a good path for us.
I feel like you've answered a lot of questions that I have about the academics. It seems like they're ahead. And then also, too, it seems like with the extracurriculars that there's a lot. So, I mean, some people are going to want their kids to be able to play sports, et cetera. Is that available for your
kids?
Oh,
yeah. That's another thing that's really growing. So, like, on the Missouri side, the homeschooling community is I'm going to say, older than the Kansas community.
Mm, okay.
I think there's been more problems with, like, the school systems and things like that. So more people started homeschooling in Missouri before as many people in Kansas have. So there's – but that's being said – there is really some growing homeschooling and like sports organizations on both sides of the state line where we're at. Mm. It's also possible for homeschooling kids to play with a lot of private schools.
Okay.
So a lot of the Christian schools or private schools, they actually want homeschoolers to come and play with for them because they don't have as many kids there to, you know, fill a whole football team.
Oh.
So they need us to play for them to make their numbers big enough to compete, you know, in different things.
So then there's lots of sporting activities.
Yeah, and all of the club sports, they're open to everyone always.
True.
And they just passed a law, I know, in our state that I think you have to take a class at like the high school, but now that it's open for homeschoolers to play in the public school system. And then like for at your school here, anything that's not like under the like the regular sports.
Mm-hmm.
So like if it was like a lacrosse or a rugby, like your school is open for homeschoolers to come and play at those situations too. But like athletics, like those were like the very few people 10 or 20 years ago that were accepted homeschoolers. You know, if you're the Olympian or like you know, those were the people that have been homeschooling for a long time.
Oh,
like the people.
Interesting.
Right? You know?
Like, well, it's been, I didn't know that. I'm not a terribly sporty person. Mm-hmm. I like to exercise and work out, but I mean, if my brother and my dad and my sister were here, they probably already knew that because they're very in tune with the whole athletic and sporty world. But it has been true in my experience as a teacher, both as a high school and a college teacher, especially as a college teacher, that oftentimes my very brightest students were all homeschooled. They were the best read, and they were the most articulate, and they were the most patient with all of their classmates. I had nothing but positive views based on personal experience. So that was just and then also, too, I mean, the original objection, which is, well, you're going to be isolated. I think you've thoroughly answered that.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to part one of Stacy's and my episode about homeschooling. Please tune in next week for part two, as Stacy reveals even more mysteries about this very successful form of teaching your kids and bonding with your family.